This is Matt from PureNintendo.com, and you are listening to the KoopaCast, PureNintendo.com's official podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank Big Giant Circles for allowing us to use his music for our podcast. To hear more of his work, please check out iTunes.com/BigGiantCircles, or you can go to BigGiantCircles.com. Hello everyone, and welcome to the KoopaCast, Pure Nintendo's official audio podcast. I'm your host, Matt, the Multimedia Manager of PNM and PureNintendo.com, and today I'm joined by Alex Schramke.
What's going on, everybody?
And for our first segment, we're going to get into some Nintendo news. So, strap yourselves in. If you want to see more about the Nintendo news that we talk about, you can always look at PureNintendo.com. And we will have all of those news stories up, and you can follow along with us. So the first thing we're going to talk about is that we're going to kind of break into some NX news, what little NX news we get nowadays.
Yeah.
By kind of talking about Ubisoft has decided to throw in their support for the NX. In an interview with Vesque Guillemot, I can never pronounce that name.
That's kind of tricky.
Yves Guillemot. I'm going to go with that. If anybody wants to correct me, I welcome it. podcast@purenintendo.com. Anyway, he's the CEO at Ubisoft, and he stated that you can expect that we'll support Nintendo, and Nintendo is one of the best partners in the world. And I feel like that's a very interesting statement, but that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say it's an outright lie. I'm not going to say Ubisoft's history has shown me otherwise. I'm just going to let people kind of reminisce on Ubisoft's support for the Wii U and what they said when the Wii U launched. And, you know, kind of let themselves, you know, conclude for themselves. I don't know. Do you think Ubisoft's going to, you know, go through with their word this time?
Honestly hope so. I want to have a positive outlook for it. Nintendo's under new management, so to speak, so I'd like to think that things will change as far as third-party relationships go. But, you know, time will tell. I'm just going to try to be positive about it. Cautious optimism. We'll put it at that.
Cautious optimism sounds good. And now joining us is Trevor Gould. Hello, Trevor.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Alex. And hi to everyone who's listening.
So, Trevor, do you have any opinions about Ubisoft's support for the NX?
Well, first of all, I'm glad they're bringing Just Dance. That was sort of a given. I mean, they're still bringing it on the original Wii, so they're selling good. I hope that we'll see a more diverse lineup of games. I think a lot of their woes with the Wii U, you know, are understandable, but some of it was their own doing as well, like with Rayman delays and such. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
That's word for word Alex's opinion too.
So I like your choice of vocabulary, sir.
Oh, I didn't mean to plagiarize you. Sorry.
We'll let it slide.
It was not.
I came in late, so I didn't know.
It was not malicious. We forgive
you. It shows you how pure Nintendo staff are of like mind on a lot of things.
It's one big hive mind, you know?
But yeah, cautious optimism is, you know, what I would use as well. Optimism, of course, because NX could always use some more third-party support. And of course, cautious because we've been over this song and dance with Ubisoft before.
We've been burned before.
I think even if they're only supporting it like on the eShop or whatever it is the Wii U has, I mean, Child of Light was an eShop only game, but that was well received. I think there's different things they can do to maximize their, you know, profits, minimize the, you know, risk.
Yeah, but I think when people think support, they think that, you know, the vast majority, we're not saying all, but like maybe like a good amount of their major franchises are going to make their way to the Nintendo console.
Yeah, when you think of support, you think of, okay, this is going to have a multi-platform release, so Nintendo's getting it as well. That's what I think of.
Mm. And hopefully on the same day as the others.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need, you know, we don't need NX version 9 months after everybody else has already received theirs. And then continuing on with the NX news. Well, it's not quite, you know, directly related to the NX, but the NX is there. Uniqlo, which is a t-shirt company, is holding their annual t-shirt contest, which is like the Uniqlo t-shirt Grand Prix. And their theme this year is going to be Nintendo. So they're working with Nintendo with that. And the winner, the first place winner of this t-shirt contest, oh, actually, I back up for a second. The contest is just design a t-shirt for this company with a theme of Nintendo. And that's about as specific as they have gotten with this. And I've gone through all of the rules that they have on there. And it's like, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Like, yes, we accept all languages. You could put it anywhere on the shirt, even inside out. It just can't be a 3D shirt. So, I mean, that's about as specific as they get with that. So the winner of that contest is going to receive $10,000 along with a NX signed by Shigeru Miyamoto. Second place gets $3,000 and also a signed NX. And third place just gets $500. Both the first and second place winners will also be able to attend the award ceremony that's going to be held in Kyoto, Japan. And they will have their t-shirts be sold in the Uniqlo store. And these prizes will be awarded in spring 2017. So for any of you aspiring artists out there, or, you know, already artists or t-shirt designers, graphic designers, what have you, Nintendo enthusiasts, you can go check out Uniqlo and, you know, go enter the contest. There are no limit to the entries at all, so you can literally put in like 100 entries if you want to, all under your name. You just have to, you know, put in your personal information over and over again. But you can do it. They said there's no limit, so there you go. So, I'm not an artist, so I'm probably not going to enter this contest at all. But I think it's interesting that it says prizes will be awarded in spring 2017, which of course includes the NX. And I feel like that's another, I don't want to say nail in the coffin, but another good argument towards a solid release date for the NX being in spring 2017.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It seems like they have a plan for it. If they're going to do a contest, then obviously they're going to stick to the release date. Whether or not that's, you know, the very last day of March is to be seen, but I think we should be able to look forward to a March release.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So are either of you going to enter this t-shirt contest?
I wish. I'm not really artistically talented, so I can't imagine what I could do. You know, I can certainly think of a good number of people who I think would be good for the contest. You know, friends on Twitter and whatnot. You know, certainly Kaylin, I think, Pure Nintendo's art curator. I'd like to see what she might do with something like this, but I can't think of anything I would personally do, but I would love the prizes. So if anyone wins and wants to donate, you know, to Pure Nintendo.
Yep. Just email podcast@purenintendo.com with your winning ticket, and we'll take it from there.
Absolutely. I might give it a shot. I'm not the greatest 2D artist, but, you know, you can't win if you don't enter. So maybe I'll give it a shot. I got some time off of work coming up. Maybe I'll get out the old pen and paper.
There you go.
Like for me, it would be awesome to win like a signed NX, but I think probably the thing I'd be most excited for would actually be going to Kyoto for the award ceremony and just like, you know, check off, you know, going to Japan as something off my bucket list, you know?
Right. And I don't know, maybe you'll get to meet Miyamoto there too. He is going to be on the special, he's going to be on like a judges panel. Like, if I remember right, it's a pool of winners selected by Uniqlo gets sent off to Miyamoto and a quote-unquote team of special judges.
Yeah, Nintendo judges.
Right, and then they pick the grand prize winner and the second prize winner.
So Matt, you're not going to do a... That's harsh. I'm sorry.
No, so I have to be judged by Nintendo if I want to win? It's going
to
be harsh.
You have to be judged by an artist at Nintendo.
Oh, man.
I was going to say, Matt, you should do a Wii Music theme shirt because we know that holds a special plate in, a place in Miyamoto's heart.
It, yeah, it's just going to be actually just text on a shirt that says, I still believe in Wii Music.
So using that insider information, I like it.
Miyamoto's and Alex, just... you know what? If you're going to actually create a shirt, then you need to submit all your concept art or whatnot so we can publish it in the mag.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If it's something that's not going to be, like, embarrassing and people are going to laugh at me, I'll definitely will submit it to the magazine.
That's a good idea. And any of you listening at home, if you want to take your t-shirt design and also submit for a magazine, we'll totally put it up because we'd love to see what you got.
We promise we won't submit it or anything ourselves.
A pure Nintendo-themed t-shirt. That could be cool.
We'll just put the pewing. It says purenintendo.com. That's idea number two. Man, we're already swimming in the entries.
Excellent.
I can feel our odds growing.
Excellent.
I was going to say something else about the contest, but now I can't remember. Now it's just all dreams of winning the contest by simple text t-shirts.
I think there was a mention that the winning designs will not get compensated for sales.
Yeah, because everything, all that intellectual property goes straight to Uniqlo.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you know,
I'm okay with $10,000.
Yeah, I'll take $10,000 and a Miyamoto signed NX.
Heck yeah. And a trip to Japan, which I'm assuming they're going to pay for.
Oh, man.
I bet the winner takes a portion of their prize money and buys a separate NX because who's going to want to play on the Miyamoto signed one?
Your explanation was way more optimistic than what I was thinking. I was thinking they were going to take the $10,000, buy an NX, and then sell the Miyamoto signed NX for much more.
Oh, man.
No. That'd be like a prize of any gaming collection. I mean, how many are there?
Exactly.
There'll be two in the world.
You'd be stupid not to sell it.
It depends on how much love you have for.
But if you got $5,000, I mean, do you need, how much more money do you need?
Well, I could use another $10,000.
I guess it depends on how much, you know, student debt or mortgage or whatever you have.
Hey, $10,000 is $10,000.
Yeah.
If somebody gives me $10,000 and then stops and then looks at me and goes, do you want another $10,000? I'm not going to say no. I'm going to say, yeah, give me another $10,000. I'm not greedy, but who's turning down an extra $10,000?
What if it's a test and you say yes and they say, well, now you get nothing?
No, because...
Good day, sir.
I'll make sure that they put the $10,000 in my hand first before they start talking like that. I don't need some Willy Wonka nonsense happening to me.
I had to drop that reference. I'm sorry.
Sony will come whispering in Matt's ear. We need you to sneak us NX specs. Your reward will be
$10,000.
And an everlasting gobstopper.
I could picture a Slugworth working for a Sony or Microsoft.
Oh, definitely.
Like, one of us is just secretly working. Like, one of us? Or, like, somebody at Nintendo?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I don't think I'd go into conspiracy theories, but I could just picture that sort of character.
It's all hypothetical, Matt. We don't have to go too deep into the rabbit hole.
We're going to start turning on each other now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, don't worry, people. We're all fine, but just look out for James, okay?
Yeah, he's a shifty one.
He is a shifty one. You never know what he's up to. And that dry sense of humor of his.
Mm-hmm.
He is an enigma.
All right. Speaking of enigmas, it's an enigma that we're already coming up on the final Splatfest.
Nice segue.
That was all improv.
I know. I was impressed.
But yeah, so the very final Splatfest for Splatoon is coming up on July 22nd. And we're finally going to settle the Callie versus Marie argument. I mean, we've never had that argument in our entire lives because, you know, we have lives and jobs and loved ones, but somebody out there is having that argument.
Somebody was going to those concerts in Japan.
And Paris.
And Paris.
I think that concert's going on right now.
Oh, is it?
I think. I don't know. Either way, so yes. So let's first talk about the fact that this is the final Splatfest. When it's only really been a year, and I don't know, I feel like that's too soon. I feel like this is an untapped thing. This is an untapped event.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it's a level of interactivity that most online games don't really have. So it's kind of sad to see it go after only a year. We should at least keep it going until like the NX comes out.
I think it's a bit... I'm sorry, I thought you were finished.
No, go for it.
Yeah, I think it's a bit premature. I mean, you look at other games like Mario Maker still getting updates. And not that... They did clarify that Splatoon is going to keep getting support, but... I mean, I was browsing over some of the comments we had on that post online and on the site, on social media, and there was a lot of shock, a lot of disappointment. So I don't know. Why would they do it? You know, is NX going to have a Splatoon part two? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they're just gearing up for Splatoon part two and the Splatfest will transfer there.
But you never know. Maybe the community can keep the spirit of the Splatfest alive. I mean, you have the Miiverse posts, so if you wanted to, you could try to orchestrate something.
Yeah.
If there's a way to do it, like a gaming community will find it. It's pretty much a safe bet always.
Yeah, where there's a will, there's a where.
Yeah, I don't think this will be like a Devil's Third situation or anything. I think there's going to be... Something will happen, even if it's not, you know, Splatfest per se.
Mm-hmm. So you guys, I mean, like I said, untapped market. So let's hear some Splatfest that could have happened. Like, I'm thinking like Mario versus Luigi. Like, where was that one?
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. You think that would be like one of the big Clash of the Titans type deals.
If only Splatoon had come out during the year of Luigi.
Indeed.
Or Twilight Princess versus Skyward Sword.
Well, that would just be one-sided. That's not really fair.
Yeah, Skyward would crush it.
No. That would totally be Twilight Princess.
Yeah, really, it's just the entire team versus Justin Sharp.
Yeah.
I'm on Skyward.
Oh, you are?
Yeah,
absolutely. So there's two people, so there's some momentum there.
Just a little bit, though.
Just a little bit.
Until your Wii Remote batteries go out.
Sometimes less is more.
Sometimes less is more. Then you should be on Twilight Princess's side. you just destroyed your own argument, sir.
There you go.
Well, I am an enigma as well.
So we have to watch out for Trevor as well.
So, continuing on with enigmas, then. Let's hear it. Let's reveal this enigma. Which team did everybody pick? Or is everybody going to pick?
Well, you already know my choice, but I voted for Marie. I don't know why. I think I like her design better. Callie's just got the weird sushi slapped on her head. I don't know. It looks like it just kind of like fell on her head or something. I don't know. I like Marie's design better. That's really all I got to say on that.
I too... favor Marie, if only for the simple fact that green's my favorite color, and there's really nothing much more to it than that.
I also chose Marie.
Wow, clean sweep.
Yeah, clean sweep of Marie.
Excellent.
Only because I think it's time for her to get out of the singing career and go back to college, which I assume that she went to.
Matt, didn't Tokyo Mirage teach you anything about singing careers?
Yeah, that's a horrible, horrible thing.
You don't want to advertise like soda and fight monsters?
And fight monsters.
And fight monsters. I don't know, that sounds pretty fun to me.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not done with the soda part. I don't even drink soda anymore.
Oh, man. You got to endorse products you believe in. That's part of it. Otherwise, you're doomed from day one.
Well, I endorse Splatfest, then.
There you go.
If I was going to endorse the soda, I would endorse Juicy Raccoon. If anybody remembers what that's from.
No, no idea.
That's kind of frightening, actually. You're going to have to explain.
That's from... It's either Resident Evil 2 or Resident Evil Nemesis. There's a bunch of vending machines all over Raccoon City, and it's Juicy Raccoon.
Wow. That's... I never noticed that when I played those games.
Now I got to Google an image, make sure I'm remembering it right.
Mostly because that was kind of small in those games, and they scared me.
Well, maybe in the N64 version, maybe it was too blurry, you couldn't pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Yeah, those were my first experience with like the N64, Resident Evil 2 and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was kind of a wimpy kid, so I thought it was too scary.
Hang on. We're getting way, way off topic here. I think we were talking about Splatfests.
Hey, I'm sorry to jump into Resident Evil.
Yeah, we didn't jump into Resident Evil. We slid in there through soda talk. Fictional soda discussions.
Talk about juicy raccoons. It's like, I had to know. I'm sorry. Sure. You can't throw that terminology out there and expect me not to take the bait.
All right. So with that out of the way, we want to hear from you, the audience. Whose side are you on this upcoming Splatfest? Are you with Marie or are you wrong? Let us know at podcast@purenintendo.com.
And also, what soda would you endorse if you were a J-pop star?
It can be real or fictional. All right. Man, I can't come up with a good segue. Give me a sec. Fictional, like the supposed release of Pokemon Gold in the U.S.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Hey-o.
So, Pokemon Go has released in some regions, including Australia, U.S., Australia, New Zealand, and parts of the United States. I noticed Android users are having a little bit more success with the getting Pokemon Go. Well, the iOS crowd is kind of just sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
Darn Apple user agreements.
Yeah, we all stuck with Apple, and we're really eating our words now. We're not eating our words. We're not really public endorsers of Apple.
We drinking our words like soda?
No, like yes.
Apple soda.
Like fresh like walrus juice. 100% fresh squeezed walrus.
I was noticing in the comments we got on the news article Gemma posted, a lot of people are like kind of getting annoyed, like, I don't see it, it's not here. And you know, the article is clear that it's only certain regions. I'm not sure how they're rolling it out, but
yeah.
At least what I've seen on Twitter, like with my followers or my friends, whatnot, it seems like it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Just to clarify for everyone, Gemma's information is about as good as everyone else's out there. Some parts of the U.S. just means some parts of the U.S. Some people are having it, like somebody down the road from me has it, and I don't have it. And we're in the same area, so I mean, that's about as specific as that's going to get for us, unfortunately. I know some people have a workaround using some kind of like, and I don't know the technical stuff. It's like some kind of APK file. And that's like a workaround to get the app going on your device.
But yeah, it's a pretty haphazard release right now. So if it's not in your area, please understand and wait.
I hear it's a battery sucker too. So maybe
they're already trying to work on that according to some news posts that I've seen. But it drains your battery like nobody's business.
Yeah. Well, you can turn off the augmented reality option on there, and that should really stave off that battery drainage. And it's good that Pokemon Go is coming out, because I need something to replace Miitomo, which I deleted.
Yeah. I was an avid Miitomo user for a couple months, but after, I don't know, 400 questions or so, I had my fill.
Yeah, I completely gave up on that game.
I don't really even... I log on daily, but I don't answer any questions anymore. I just I go for like the Miitomo drop. And just to get new costumes. That's really about it.
It doesn't help that the My Nintendo program hasn't, in my opinion, been very, very strong in its early goings.
No, it really hasn't offered us anything.
And I mean, I get coins from logging on the eShop or logging on Miiverse, and that's enough for me because there's nothing to spend them on for me anyway.
Kind of a little bit more news about the Pokemon Go. If you're looking for that Pokemon Go Plus watch or pendant, that's still sold out. And they're restocking it, is to be announced. So I went ahead and signed up for, like, you know, please notify me when it comes out, because I'm going to buy it and check it out myself.
Yeah.
It's what, $34.95 or?
Yeah.
I'm going to plan on picking it up as well, because I feel like I'll get more use out of the app if I have that thing with me instead of, like, constantly having my phone out.
So hopefully for all you listening at home, stay tuned for the next episode where we will hopefully have the app and we'll be talking about our impressions.
Might put a poll up on Twitter to see if people are just going to stick with the free version or if they're going to invest in the paid version, or even if they feel like paying for a, you know, extra, I forget what it is, but you know.
Yeah, that'd be fun. All right. I always look forward to hearing from people with those polls, so if you see it, please vote on it.
I think the max I saw, somebody was showing a screenshot, you can spend on, I don't even know if DLC is the word, but I think the max is like you can spend $99.99.
Oh, I thought I saw $59.99, but you could be right. Yours makes more sense than what I thought I saw.
Well, I don't know. I don't even remember what they're called now. Pokebucks or whatever.
Poke Coins, which is the game's in-game currency.
So, you know, sounds like a lot, but I've heard of people doing it with, you know, Candy Crunch or whatnot. So, you never know.
And continuing on with Pokemon news, it was recently announced that we saw a few new Pokemon for Pokemon Sun and Moon. I'm just going to run down that list real quick, and then we'll just kind of talk about impressions. Tapu Koko. Grubbin's evolutions have shown up, which is Charge Bug, which is their middle evolution, and then Vigivolt, which is their final evolution. Finally, we have Drapa, which is normal dragon type, Bruxish, which is a water psychic type, Cutiefly, which is a bug fairy type, and Togedemaru, which is an electric steel type.
Interesting type, electric steel. Normally I don't go for the Pikachu clones, but I might have to try that one out. As I'm trying to think, and I don't know if we've had an electric steel type before.
I think it's weird that, just kind of looking at these names, a lot of these are like some kind of pun or whatever, and then the last one is just a Japanese name.
Oh, never mind. We have had an electric steel, I have to say. My Pokemon cred, we had Magnezone.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I just remembered, but I enjoyed using Magnezone, so.
Well, wouldn't all the magnet variants electric and steel?
They were, I think it was in Gold, Silver, and Crystal they got changed. Originally, they were just pure electric types in the original games.
Yeah, because I feel like they were steel and gold.
Yeah, that's steel type came in the Gold, Silver, and Crystal. So I think they gained that secondary typing in that one.
Okay.
And so I gotta save my Pokemon cred.
So what did everybody think about these new Pokemon here?
Well, for me, I think I totally called that Grubbin was going to be a bug electric type. And I think his final evolution, Vikavolt, looks pretty cool. It's kind of like a stag beetle. That one will be pretty fun to raise. I hope it gets some good moves. I'm kind of afraid it might be one of those like Caterpie clones where it's kind of like the weak bug type that you get rid of as soon as you find better Pokemon. I'd like to use it throughout the whole game. And
yeah.
Drampa is probably my favorite because he's just like this old man grandpa dragon.
He just looks like he's cool with anything that's going on. He's like, hey man, what's going on? A battle? Oh, that sounds awesome, man.
He's the cool grandpa Pokemon. So I'm definitely going to catch one of those and use it on my team. Bruxish.
That's kind of hard to say. What is that thing?
It's...
You got to say it like Sean Connery.
Bruxish. Exactly. That actually makes it easier. Thank you. So Bruxish. It is the Gnash Teeth Pokemon. It's some kind of tropical fish. I get what they were going for with the scary teeth, because it looks like the type of tropical fish that would have the grind plates to eat coral. And so they just kind of took those grind plates and kind of made them look like scary sharp teeth. But Bruxish is nightmare fuel, and I will be staying far away from that.
It looks like they just took like a fish from the Yellow Submarine and then slapped it into like a Picasso painting or something.
It does have a Yellow Submarine vibe, I'll give you that. I could actually, depending on its stats, one of the abilities that it has is Dazzling, and that prevents moves with increased speed priority from hitting. I could actually see that being a pretty good ability to use in competitive battling. It'd be a great check against Pokemon that have those high priority moves.
Alex, are you a competitive battler?
I dabble a little bit. I dabble. My big toe has stepped into the metagame.
Oh, man. So we're going to see you in, like, some tournaments next year, right?
Totally.
Representing PureNintendo.com?
I got to. I'll have to start a EV and IV training.
There's a difference between EV and IV training? I thought it was just EV training.
Well, I should say EV training is the only thing that exists. IVs are short for individual values. And that is a number from 0 to 31 that gets randomly assigned to each stat a Pokemon has. And that gives it diversity so that two Pokemon, even if they have the same nature, will be different. So like one might have an individual value of 12 in special attack, and then one might have 31, which would be the best in special attack. So there's only like a couple point difference. But, you know, when you're playing a technical game like that, like those couple points matter as far as damage output goes. So Pokemon can get surprisingly deep if you've never dived that farther down into it.
This sounds like we're getting into math, and I don't want to do that.
It blows your mind at first, but it's not too bad.
All right, and kind of moving on to the other Pokemon here. Cutiefly, that looked boring, so we don't have to talk about that at all.
No, that one's awesome. Look up, go on Google Images and type in B-Fly, because that is what Cutiefly is based off, a B-Fly. And I thought they did a pretty good job of kind of adapting that little creature into a Pokemon. I can appreciate the design.
I'm looking at B-Fly right now. B-Fly.
Yeah, I'm not too impressed. Right?
Yeah, I'm not too impressed.
Oh, man, you guys are lame. It's a bug fairy type. That's going to be an interesting typing.
I mean, I guess.
Maybe I should have typed cartoon bug fly or something. Or no, B-Fly.
Cartoon B-Fly.
B-Fly, yeah.
No, that is what I typed, but it just looks like regular bees to me, pretty much.
I'm going to take a look at it.
When I add cartoon to the search, now they look kind of cute.
No, I think the bug typing will be interesting with the fairies.
No, that one could... I'm looking at it again. Just to get a second impression, it just looks like somebody took like one of the shuttlecocks and just stuck some little dangly things on it and two wings.
You know, they're just ripping off the Game Boy Advance game, Pinnaby, Wings of Adventure.
I do not get that reference at all.
That's a Game Boy Advance game. I think it was on the PlayStation too.
You know some obscure games.
Hey, well, you know, those who don't know their retro pass are doomed to repeat it. Or like actually, that's not such a bad thing.
Like, yeah, it's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. So, and
then, I thought, with all the Pokemon release, there was quite a few electric types. Including Tapu Koko, which I think looks awesome. And he's Electric Fairy. And so a lot of people have started to speculate, and I kind of agree that maybe each island you go to has like a dominant type that you'll see a lot of. So maybe the starting island will have a lot of electric types, and maybe one will have predominantly fire types. This is all just speculation, mind you, but I think that would be pretty interesting if they went along the lines of doing that in each island you visited. Had like its own little island protector, like some kind of variation of Tapu Koko for each island.
I gotcha. I think that'd be interesting.
I think that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, and finally, let's talk about Togedemaru.
Yeah. It's a Pikachu clone.
It's a Pikachu electric. That somebody like shoved a bicycle pump into and tried to inflate.
The Dig Dug guy got a hold of him.
Well, there you go. I want to see that gif of like Pikachu just sitting there, and the Dig Dug guy comes, just puts the little pump into him, and then we get Togedemaru.
Somebody's gotta make that happen.
I'm looking at you, Internet.
Exactly. Electric Steel type, we've already covered. It's been done before, but it's pretty good. So nice typing. It'll really just depend on stats and moves. I'd like to see it get an evolved form.
It seems like that's something that might.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had, oh gosh, my mind's blanking on the name. In the last gen, we had the electric fairy type, the Dedenne, that's what it was. It looked like it was a gerbil version of Pikachu, and that one didn't get an evolution. So I hope Togedemaru doesn't suffer the same fate, because it could use one badly.
I'm
going to advocate for the Dig Dug Pokemon thing. Because not only has Namco worked with Nintendo before, but I think the main enemies in Dig Dug were called like Pukas. So that just writes itself like Puka Men or, you know.
Puka Men, yeah.
It just seems natural.
Okay. We should have Puka Pokemon.
I have some possible trivia for everybody. While you guys were talking, I went ahead and looked up Togedemaru and see if there was like a name origin we can look at.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like there's two conflicting theories on Bulbapedia. The first one is Togedemaru may be based on a hedgehog or a Ryukyu spiny rat. Ryukyu spiny rat called Togenezumi in Japanese. Or it may derive from Toge, which is thorn or spine, possibly Denki, electricity, and Maru, round. So it may literally be meant as Togedemaru, thorned and round.
I'd probably go with that one since it's called the Roly-Poly Pokemon. They like their puns, so that's probably the more likely of the two.
That's very true. So there you go, everybody. I hope we all learned something today.
I know I did. But yeah, I'm excited for the new Pokemon. I have a lot of optimism based on what they've revealed so far. The only one that frightens me is a Bruxish. So
I'll be killing every single one I come across.
I'm going to have to catch one if I'm going to catch them all, but that's going like way, way into the very back of the PC and it will never see the light of day.
Have you ever caught them all past like Generation 3?
Oh yeah.
Really? Do you have all now?
This is kind of, it's not sad because I have to own it. I really enjoy Pokemon. I have one of every Pokemon in Pokemon Bank right now for the sole purpose of transferring over to Sun and Moon so that I can have a complete Pokedex in that one.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
That's dedication.
Are you just a completionist in general though, Alex, or is it just Pokemon in particular?
I am a bit of a completionist, but Pokemon is something that I've grown up with, And I think I spent many car rides playing Pokemon and just like training and catching them. So I think it's kind of like second nature to me. Like I kind of have to. I don't know. It's just something that I've grown up with, and I really enjoy collecting them all.
All right. So I hope you listeners at home are enjoying our secret second feature of the Koopa Cast, where we dive deep into Alex's psyche.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
It starts right now, actually.
Oh, man.
All right. Actually, no. We're actually gonna end it all right now. And so, Alex, I want to thank you for joining me for this new segment.
Well, thanks. It was a pleasure, I guess.
Trevor, thank you also for joining me on this new segment.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime.
And so, for those of you listening at home, stay tuned for part two, where we tackle a couple of reviews, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Koopa Cast. I am joined for this segment with Trevor Gould.
Hi everybody, thanks for listening.
And Harrison Melfeld.
Hey everybody, glad to be back here.
And in this segment we're going to talk about a couple reviews. We're going to talk about Tokyo Mirage Sessions, F.E. Sharp, and Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix. First, we're going to start with Tokyo Mirage Sessions. That was released on the Wii U on June 24th, 2016 by Atlas and Intelligent Systems. They were the developers behind this one. And I reviewed this game. I gave it an 8.5. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to both Trev and Harrison, and they're going to kind of ask me some questions about the game.
Well, first question before I had to say... you said F.E. Sharp. Are we sure we're not talking about Sharp F.E.? Or is this just a...
Listen, I've never played a Sharp F in my life. It's F Sharp, not Sharp F.
I actually think it's hashtag F.E.
It could be hashtag on F.E. I don't know. They might use... I don't know if they use hashtags when they text each other in the game.
Well, there's a question. Do you think it's done the game a disservice by not having Fire Emblem feature prominently in the title?
No, because Fire Emblem is, I mean, the influence of Fire Emblem can be found in like the rock, paper, scissors battle system. You know, axes beat lances, lances beat swords, swords beat axes. Like, that's in there. Obviously, the mirages or like the otherworldly companions to like the entertainers, there are characters from Fire Emblem. There's some stuff near the end that has more to do with Fire Emblem, but I'm not going to give that away because that might be like a little bit spoilery, so we're not going to talk about that. But the Fire Emblem influence is there, but it's like, you know, maybe a quarter of the way there versus, you know, more of Atlas's more prominent, like Shin Megami Tensei and like, you know, the Persona and stuff like that. Like, that's much more prominent there versus like Fire Emblem influences.
That was one question I wanted to ask, basically, because obviously when this title was like first announced back in, what was it, January 2013, when she was just referred to as Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem, and for the longest time we thought to ourselves, like, oh, this is going to be a Shin Megami Tensei game mixed in with the gameplay aspects of Fire Emblem. That, of course, turned out to be wrong, and, you know, the complete opposite. This is more something we'd see like in a Persona game, or yes, in bits of what we see in Shin Megami Tensei. But do you feel like that the Fire Emblem stuff, though, in there is well represented enough to, you know, to make this feel like, okay, there's enough Fire Emblem here to actually make me feel like it actually, this is a legit crossover?
That's a tough one to kind of ask or answer, mostly because I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that there's not a good way to really do a crossover, like, in these kinds of worlds. And I feel like the way that, like, Atlas and Intelligent Systems tackled it, where they just kind of They've featured Fire Emblem characters in there, and they're kind of there. I think that was good enough. Interestingly enough, I believe I read an interview where they talked about the early development of when it was still Shin Megami Cross Fire Emblem, and there was supposed to be like more of like a Fire Emblem battle system in there, which, you know, the tactical strategy, like that was something they were thinking about in the early stages, and they just kind of decided to like throw that out and stick with, you know, the more traditional JRPG and kind of like what Atlus does best when they do like the JRPG systems.
I would think at least in tone, maybe it's more Fire Emblem because, and I admit I'm not familiar firsthand with Shin Megami Persona games. I haven't played them, but from what I've read, they're more like darker themed games. I think the last entries, at least, have all been M-rated, whereas this is more of a colorful, teen-rated game. So I would think, in terms of having maybe going for a broader appeal, it would tap into the Fire Emblem audience that way.
I mean, there's some stuff obviously Fire Emblem fans are going to recognize. You're going to see like the classes, like Fire Emblem classes are going to be there. Like the characters each have their own class. You can get something called a Master Seal, which allows characters to change their classes. Like they can like upgrade to new classes. So that's back. There's like little Fire Emblem tunes here and there, and I think that's about pretty much as far as like really that goes. Everything else, like, you know, how the characters interact with each other, like the focus on like the personal relationships, I think that's more like what you see in like the Shin Megami Tensei series versus like the Fire Emblem series.
One thing I wanted to ask, obviously there's plenty that we're going to have to go around with this, but compared to like Xenoblade Chronicles X, would you say that Tokyo Mirage Sessions is a little bit more accessible and less, you know, less of a burden, as in like, you know, it's less intimidating to get into?
Let me go ahead and start out by saying that congratulations to KoopaCast for reaching at least 2 episodes of the KoopaCast without mentioning Xenoblade Chronicles X.
I had to do it, didn't I? So,
good job, everyone. We did it. Big banner with balloons. In terms of accessibility, this is a more difficult JRPG. With a little bit of research and understanding, you can figure it out. But if you mess up in this game, you mess up big. Like, you can go down pretty fast. So it's a lot less forgiving than maybe many JRPGs would be. But it's not very intimidating at all. Like, you kind of figure out the systems pretty quickly. You understand what skills do. You understand what attack does. You understand what guard does. You understand what the items do. Okay. So it's very accessible. It's just difficult.
Okay, I mean, I can understand the difficulty standard on there and something that you could actually get around with it. I guess what I was really mean was like when you had with Xenoblade X, something, you know, I was just amazed by just by the sheer scope of the world. But thing is that this would always put off a lot of newcomers to that game, where it was the fact like there's a lot of moving parts in that game, whereas I assume there's not a lot of moving parts in this one.
No, not a lot. They're not gonna throw like a bunch of like stats screens at you or anything like that. You're not like equipping a bunch of different armors and stuff like that. You have like 2 equipment slots that matter in each character, which is your weapon and your accessory. After that, you can kind of change your costume, but that's more of an external appearance. But once you like look at that, you're fine. Like, The character stats, if you've ever played like a Fire Emblem game, you've seen those stats before. You've seen, you know, strength, defense, skill, magic, resistance, luck. You've seen those before. And if you know what those are in those games, then you're going to know what they are and how they function in this game.
How is it in terms of having, your checkpoints, or does it prompt you to save?
Right before any large boss, you'll see a screen, like, it'll say something like, I sense a dangerous presence ahead, and then do proceed or not proceed. And, you know, you can always save it right before then. You know, hit do not proceed, and go into the menu and save. So they're never going to catch you by surprise for a boss fight. Now, on the other hand, they do have these enemies called savage enemies that can appear randomly, and they're going to be like these like purple cloaked guys as opposed to the red cloaked standard enemies. And these savage energies, these savage enemies are usually leveled about 5 levels higher than your highest guy, at least 5 levels higher. So if they come up and surprise you, unless you can successfully run away, or you know use like an item called Smoke Machine, which allows you to escape flawlessly, you can get your butt kicked pretty quickly, and then you know start over from the last save.
I gotta ask, just because it's got a pop theme, is the smoke machine like a literal smoke machine, like you might find on the stage?
So a lot of the items are, you know, tailored to like the performance thing, or maybe to modern day Tokyo. So like you have like energy drinks. There's a brand called Amrita, so they have Amrita sodas, and that you know heals all status ailments. They have things like called smoke machines, which of course you escape. They have another item called clap track that builds up your special meter. So, you know, there's, you know, some stuff like that.
I like that.
Well, how does as someone who's really interested in this game though, like really ever since it was first announced though, how does it play exactly? Just give me an example of like how combat works, because this just seems. Anytime when I show like this trailer to friends, it just seems to me like, yeah, it's complete bonkers, but it's colorfully bonkers.
It is colorfully bonkers. It's a standard turn-based battle system. When you enter a random battle, you get sent to like this stage where your characters surround the enemy, and they have like all like little pictures behind them. I feel like, you know, their face or whatever. And basically that's your screen. You can just sit there and leave it for a while and go make a sandwich and come back and the enemies are going to attack. So you don't have to worry about that. You basically have things like attacks, skills. Skills is what you're going to be using the most, because they'll allow you to set up these things called sessions, which are if you like and exploit an enemy's weakness. Like say for an example, I've got a sword guy out, like Itsuki. He's the sword guy. He's got a sword. And I attack an axe person with a sword-based skill. And since swords beat axes, that's weak. And I can start, like, a session with, like, my other co-stars, say, like, Tsubasa and Toma. And they'll, like, attack one right after the other to do more damage to an enemy.
Okay. Because I noticed how, I think on the top portion of the screen where, I can't think of the name right now, it's escaping me. It's not a skill set, whatever, but it just seems like, you know, I'm looking.
Oh, the top screen where it shows like the route, the turn order.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. It's basically it's his next round and stuff in there. I'm like, what is that? Is that just like okay, in order of like which of these characters are going in terms of like when they're going to attack?
Right, exactly. And I'm gonna. You know, sorry for my Nintendo purists out there, but I'm going to reference a non-Nintendo game. If you guys ever played Final Fantasy X, they have a little turn order indicator too. You know, here's Tidus, here's Waka, here's the enemy, and then, you know, here's Auron. They'll have that, but of course they split it into rounds for Tokyo Mirage Sessions. And that's significant in that there are certain abilities that will last, like, certain rounds, like, you know, if I use an attack mirror, it'll repel attacks for this round. And then when you go on to the next round, obviously the effect is lost. So you kind of have to pay attention to, you know, first of all, the order, and second of all, when the round ends.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Is there much grinding in the game?
I did not grind too much. There were a couple points where I did grind a little bit. Some of it was just to get items. Well, I get so farming for, like, Performa. I did do a little grinding for that. There was some grinding for levels, but not too much. And that's only because I kind of fought every single enemy I, you know, came across, because I didn't really get tired of the battle system at all, so I look forward to the next fight.
No, that's good.
And by the time everything was said and done, I was at level 63.
How long did it take you to complete this, though?
63 hours.
63, okay. That's definitely... That's about, yeah, way lower than... Because when I played Xenoblade, it took me about like 120 to actually finish with story. And that was me doing side quests and all that, so... yeah, I don't know. This is just, I guess throughout playing it, though, I mean, I feel like this, yeah, this is a very niche title, but it's a niche title. I feel like you don't want it to be, like, forgotten by Wii U owners. And it's, like, one of those games where I feel like even if you're nuts, if you have the slightest bit of interest in JRPGs, this could be up your alley. And, I don't know. I feel like this is the type of title that could probably, once you see the Wii U's all dead and gone for good, actually, you can actually see this being mentioned on the list of, like, an underappreciated Wii U game.
I can see that as well. I definitely agree with your, you know, the JRPG having a place on the Wii U. Obviously, the 3DS has been a major destination for JRPGs in this past generation. Wii U hasn't really gotten much of anything at all. In fact, I can't really think of a JRPG for the Wii U off the top of my head, aside from Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Xenoblade kind of counts, I mean, but it has Western influences.
Yeah, that's more of a neck and action, I guess. Like, this is more traditional JRPG.
Yeah.
So you don't see very many of that genre kind of popping up on the Wii U. So, you know, anyone who might be, you know, missing that kind of genre on their console, this is definitely something they would be interested in picking up. And it's funny you mentioned side quests, Harrison. I do want to point out that in my 63-hour playthrough, I did every character's side arc. They call them, like, side stories. And some of them do require... Some of them are, you know, fighting. Some of them are just going through cutscenes and answering their questions and getting a few laughs. And, you know... There's humor in there. There's a good amount of humor in there. So... I don't feel like any of, like, the cutscenes, just watching the cutscenes were, you know, wasted going to Destination B, C, and D, and, you know, hitting yes or no. Like, I felt like it was worth it because I kind of wanted to see what these characters would react to, like, certain situations. And so it was very entertaining for me anyway.
But the characters were memorable, though. I mean, well, some were memorable, I presume.
They were all memorable in their own way, I believe. Like, I don't feel like anybody really overstayed their welcome. I definitely got to know each and every character. One, of course, through their side stories. And another was through their, like, instant messaging service they had on their phones called Topic. And Topic is used for the players to, you know, you can see details of, like, the main story, like, as told through the characters. Like, Tomo will, you know, text me about, you know, oh, we need to get out there and fight that Mirage, you know, because, you know, XYZ motivation, you know, and then Tsubasa will chime in and you're like, yeah, and I'm kind of nervous about this, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, that's the main story, but, like, they'll, like, kind of contact you periodically, you know, just on the side, and they'll say stuff that has nothing to do with the main story or their side stories. You know, there'll just be, like, some things like, you know, oh, just got through with work today, I'm exhausted. Or I was going over an example I told with I was talking to Trevor about earlier this week. Early in the game, when we join Fortuna Entertainment, which is like an entertainment company, so Itsuki and Tsubasa joined that, and the boss there is named like Maiko, I believe. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Maiko. And like I'm out and about in Shibuya, and I guess Tsubasa's back at the entertainment, and I get like a text from Tsubasa. And she says something to the effect of, I don't understand Miss Maiko at all. She just keeps looking over, leering over to me, and just doing that stupid laugh that, it's really creeping me out.
Oh, gee.
And then I get, like, another text, like, a couple minutes later. She says, please don't tell her I said that.
No. Oh, jeez.
And I like that. It's time-wasting nonsense, but it's, like, that's what, you know, that's what people text to each other. They text each other nonsensical stuff sometimes, you know, just to, because they're friends. And I felt like the world was much more believable that way.
Do you think, because it sounds like, even if it's not the most innovative use of the gamepad, it sounds like it's a fun use of the gamepad. Do you think they used it well?
I do. I don't feel like it's something that's like, you know, Atlas is like, oh my god, we need to use the gamepad for something. Oh, what are we going to do? You know, and it's not like, you know, it's just off-screen, off-TV play, I think that's the term. They don't actually have off-TV play at all, at least. If there is, I never found the option. But I thought this was good. You know, you can check the maps, you can just check text messages, and, you know, I like that. I think that was a good enough use of the gamepad, and it wasn't intrusive at all, and it didn't break the flow of the game at all. So, I was all for what they did with the gamepad.
That's nice to hear.
Well, I'm trying to think as far as something else to say, but there weren't any, like, portions of the game where you felt like it dragged a little bit, or it, that's to say, it didn't drag, there weren't any parts that necessarily dragged for you, right?
No, not mean. I would say the ending dragged a little bit, but that's just because I was in a hurry to get it done. So that's just from a professional standpoint. But I feel like I could have, I could have stuck with that story for a few more chapters, I think. Just simply because I kind of liked, interacting with the characters, and I liked hearing where their stories were going and, how they were going to achieve their goals. Not so much like the Mirage stuff. I could really kind of care less about that after a little while because, they never really talk about it too much. Like, the chapters are like, go into this dungeon and defeat this boss Mirage that's possessed this person. Okay, you did it. End of chapter.
I kind of like that, because I shouldn't say a lot, but some RPGs that I've played, it seems like the characters are just tools to move you from point A to point B and advance the overall story, where in this case it sounds like the main focus and story is with the individuals and not the Mirage plot. I think that's a good focus, because you get more interested, invested in the characters you're controlling.
Right, yeah.
Could you possibly see, maybe down the line, who knows, we could probably see, not necessarily a sequel to this, but maybe we could probably see a reverse aspect of this, crossover. Maybe we could probably see the same characters, but they take the different aspect of it and make it, they go the Fire Emblem route.
I don't know if that would work, mostly because of the kind of the theme that was going on. It was weird enough having these like pop stars and actors going into these other worlds and fighting, on these JRPG systems, but I can't imagine having these same characters in modern day Tokyo, like, in these large-scale battles, I guess?
Not necessarily that, but just kind of like this, you have that turn-based aspect to whatever. It just has that asymmetric viewpoint that we see in like Fire Emblem on the map. Not to say that, you're battling armies, but you're... Oh, no. I'm trying to think of something like... I guess what I should have said was, like, does this leave room for a sequel, or is it very... self-contained.
It's very self-contained. Obviously, I'm not going to give away the ending, but... What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
It's a very self-contained story. It concludes, and it's a very firm conclusion. And everyone just kind of goes about their business after that. Obviously, I can't say what happens, but, I don't see a sequel happening.
Because there's DLC out, and I don't know if there's more in the works, but do you know much about that? Is it mainly just, like, side quests, or does it, I don't know a great deal about it, so.
Unfortunately, I don't know too much about the DLC. I haven't bought it yet. I guess I should. One of them looks like it's a fashion show. That's kind of weird. And the other ones look like they're just dungeons for grinding. So it doesn't look like...
Okay.
Yeah, so... Oh, I almost said something. But yeah, it doesn't look like it's something that could happen after the main story.
That's what I was, I guess, curious about. If it's just going to be new areas to combat, or if it will flesh out the characters of the story to some extent.
I mean, maybe the fashion show might. I'm not entirely sure of that, unfortunately. Alright, and I think we're going to go ahead and push on through, finished up with Tokyo Mirage Sessions here.
We didn't address the one elephant in the room.
The what?
Can we talk a little bit about the J-pop influence?
Oh yeah, that. I was like, was it, did you enjoy the music?
I do not enjoy J-pop. I'm sorry. I'm going to get that out there
and
right now.
You gave the game an 8.5.
What's that?
So that says something.
Yeah, that does.
I said, and you managed to give the game a high score.
Yeah. And, I mean, the J-pop, it's well done, I guess. I mean, as far as I can judge J-pop, I guess, it's done okay. They have, I guess there were, like, when I was looking through the credits, they also have, like, coordinators, I want to say. Oh, no, choreographers, I'm sorry, choreographers. So there's obviously some choreography going. It looks like that was done pretty well. All the songs were done by actual artists, I believe.
They are, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I guess they sing pretty well. Most of the songs I liked. There was one song that was really rough. Well, no, there are two songs that were really rough, both for completely different reasons. One I can't talk about because that's at the very end of the game. The other one is, like, just the music video is just so odd.
I Oh, I need to see this now.
Did you find, like, the subtitles worked out?
Like,
keeping the original text?
Yeah, and it makes sense the way they talked about it. Okay, after that, let's talk about, move on to the next game. Interestingly enough, another music game, or another music-centric game, that also had some J-pop. Rhythm Heaven Megamix, which was released on June 15th, 2016, which is actually a full year after Japan got it.
Mm-hmm. And not, you know, not unlike, in a way, Tokyo Mirage. I mean, that was maybe not a full year, but that was out for a while, a few months at least.
Yeah, Tokyo Mirage came out in December 2015 in Japan.
So, better late than never, and in the waning years of the Wii U and to a lesser extent, the 3DS life.
Oh, yeah. So, Trev, talk to us a little bit about Rhythm Heaven Megamix. Like, what were your experiences with this game?
It was a lot of fun. It was very addictive. I think if you're the type who really likes, you know, going for high scores, improving your high scores, this game really does it well. It gives you plenty of incentives to keep going, to unlock new content and fun little extras, but the games themselves are just, you know, really, really zany. That's probably not the best word, but the characters are quirky. The activities you do and are just all over the map. And I mean, there's the main campaign. We got a little over 80 games, I think. Plus unlockable, so there's going to be, even if you can't get into them all, there's going to be some that you really think, wow, this is cool. This is a lot of fun.
Was it a pretty long experience overall?
You know, it's hard to say exactly because I didn't play it like systematically through. Like I would play sections and then I would go back to try to improve high scores before moving on to brand new areas. So I don't know actually how much time I've spent with it. I'm still playing it. But I would say, at least compared to the last Rhythm Heaven game I played on the Wii, there's definitely a lot of content. A lot of it is from prior versions, but they still manage to make them fresh, like old games have new skins or variations on the classic tunes. You know, there's a little twist in the formula. So even if you're a veteran, I think there's a lot of content that'll keep you playing.
Is this game pretty difficult to get into?
No, it's not. In fact, that's one of the positives. Is it's really, you know, it's basic. I mean, you tap, you know, the first few mini games, you're basically tapping like the A button or the B button or with the stylus, if that's your preference. And, you know, it's just tapping in B with simple rhythms. Once you get towards the end, it definitely can get tricky. The tempos get a lot faster. There's a lot more rhythms to keep track of. And, you know, especially towards the end, they eliminate the, and this probably isn't really a spoiler, but they eliminate the practice. So you better hope, you know, that you can remember, you know, whatever dozen games they decide to throw at you in rapid succession, or else you're quickly gonna fail.
Hmm. Now, this game is
easy to get into, but tough to master.
No, I'm one who's perfectly unfamiliar with the Rhythm Heaven games, and generally this felt like a good way for me to actually get introduced to it, because this was a collection, I believe, from the previous games in the series, from the DS and I believe the Wii title, but also there are mini games from the GBA title which didn't come here, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It was, I guess, the series debuted in Japan, so some of them are new to us. I couldn't necessarily tell you off the top of my head which are from the GBA versus which ones are brand new for the 3DS. I have a suspicion, just based on the nature of the games. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, even if you happen to play the old games, even if you played the GBA one, it's going to feel largely new because it's remixed. It's not just a straight port with some token new content. So you have to relearn a lot of the old games you might have mastered on the other systems. You know, there's different beats, there's new rhythms, there's new wrinkles in the visuals to try to trip you up and make you, you know, lose focus on the beat, because there is some visual cues, you know, but if you tend to get too focused on them, then they'll throw in a new graphic, or they'll zoom the camera out, or have somebody walk in front of the screen. It's cool.
Try it further there. I've been told, though, that there's some quite a few minigames that just, well, I wouldn't say seem unfair, but yeah, actually, that's what I'm saying. They just seem unfair.
I wouldn't use that word myself, but there's definitely games that you need patience for, and you need to be, you know, willing to put in some practice to get better. One of the nice things about this game is if you do fail a game repeatedly, they do give you the option to spend in-game coins, so you can temporarily bypass that, which I actually did use on a few, which just seems like I couldn't even wrap my head around the beat. It was just outside of my scope. But then I found, after I advanced and played some harder ones, I went back and suddenly they clicked. And I went from a game where I was getting, you know, terrible scores, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got a superb, I got a perfect. So it's rewarding if you're willing, you know, to practice, if you're the type of person who just wants to, you know, to bust through the games quickly, then you might call them unfair, but I think they're just challenging.
Word. Mm.
All right. And I hate to keep moving along, and I hate to give Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix not as much screen time, especially because we spent so much time on Tokyo Mirage Sessions, but we are running a little bit long here, so I want to go ahead and start, you know, wrapping up. So, Trev, what did you give Rhythm Heaven Megamix?
I give it a 9. And It's my, I think I mentioned, it's my favorite 3DS game I played this year, eShop or otherwise. I am sad that it's not getting a physical release in this region, but I understand that. I've seen the sale numbers for the games in North America, and they just can't match, you know, elsewhere in the world. So
it is getting a physical release in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is getting one in Europe. So, which is cool. I'd rather see it get released somewhere physical than not at all. But I know some people were really bummed about that, but I would say, you know, it's better to play it digitally than to skip it all together, because you'll be missing out on a fun time. And I actually think, you know, talking about this and Tokyo Mirage, you know, it could be a good compliment, because Tokyo Mirage, you're talking about a lengthy campaign. Rhythm Heaven, you're talking about, you know, some quick burst mini games. So you can sink a couple hours into a Tokyo Mirage, and then if you want to chill out, you can play Rhythm Heaven for 20 minutes and have a good time.
So there you go. If you're sick of listening to J-pop, you just switch over to the next game and listen to some more J-pop.
It's not all J-pop. There's quite a mix. I give them credit, you know. There's everything from ballroom dancing to download the demo. It'll give you a taste of some of the things you can expect.
All right. So you were talking pretty good on this game. 9.0, is this a potential 3DS game of the year?
It is for me. Of course there's the Pokemon games are coming, but as some of the pure Nintendo fans know, those aren't my cup of tea compared to other first party efforts, so for me I'm gonna push for this game.
What are you talking about? Federation Force is going to blow the door open in August.
Yep. Harrison's calling it now.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm hoping Nintendo sends us 4 copies so we can test it out as a group.
And at first, people who are, like, vehemently, like, against that, whatever, or if they – I never really understand just the seething hatred. I understand, yeah, we need a new Metroid game, but thing is, with that one, it's like if you just say – I don't think this looks good. It's not for me. That's totally fine. It just, I'm curious how this turns out. And the more I've heard of it, it seems like it's not going that same route that I've seen with like Triforce Heroes, where it's not that great of a game unless you have friends playing with it. So thankfully this one, I think I could see, all right, I can actually enjoy this playing by myself, but it's a bonus if I have multiple people. So.
All right. And with that, I want to go ahead and start thinking, or start wrapping this up, excuse me. I do want to start wrapping this up.
Oh, one question for you real quick.
Shoot.
Because you asked me about if I thought Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix could be a contender for 3DS Game of the Year. Now, you reviewed Star Fox Zero and Tokyo Mirage Sessions, both games you scored 8 or more. Do you think this has potential as a Dark Horse candidate for Game of the Year?
Tokyo Mirage Sessions more so than Star Fox Zero, I think, for Game of the Year. Yeah, especially more than Star Fox Zero. Star Fox Zero was fun for what it was, but Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I think Tokyo Mirage Sessions scratched that itch that the Wii U fan base was looking for more than Star Fox Zero did.
Sounds good.
And with that, I want to go ahead and thank you, Trev, and you, Harrison, for joining me on this episode of the KoopaCast.
Oh, no problem.
And I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning into the KoopaCast this week. If you have a question for the KoopaCast, you can always email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. You can also talk to us on Twitter. I am @purely_Matt. Trevor is @purely_G1. And Harrison is @HMilfeld. And all of us together.
That is not my Twitter handle.
What's that?
That is not my Twitter handle.
It says it right here in my notes. Trev_G1.
That is my handle, but you said @purely_G1.
No, that was last week.
Rewind it. Harrison, back me up here.
I think I did see hear a number at the end of that one.
Well, whatever.
What
only I know the true answer to that, because I am the editor.
And it's, yeah, it's like, oh, it's all gone.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It says at TrevG1. I'll just re-edit it. So Trevor is at TrevG1. See, I'll just take that.
At Trev underscore G1. Underscore.
At Trev underscore G1. And then I'll just take that section and I'll edit it over the other section. So I was right in the first time. And then I'll cut all this out so nobody knows what we're talking about. And all of us together are at Pure Nintendo. If you want to hear more of the KoopaCast, just go to our website, purenintendo.com, and click on the KoopaCast button at the top of the page. If you want to listen to the KoopaCast on iTunes, you can find us. Just go to iTunes and look up KoopaCast. For those of you who want to check us out via RSS feed, just go to purenintendo.com/feed/podcast. And finally, for more news, reviews, and features, please check out purenintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.